This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Gay conversion therapy is still happening in Australia. Welcome to this special podcast of The Informer, where we'll hear extended interviews with guests from our conversion therapy episode. I'm Dean Arcuri. Senator Janet Rice is no stranger to advocating for the rights of our communities in Parliament, and recently she spoke of gay conversion therapy. Sharing Chris's story, she called on Prime Minister Turnbull to show leadership and ensure that the harmful practice of gay conversion therapy is stamped out. Now hear her full speech in Parliament, as well as an interview she had following that speech with myself, Liv and Tom from The Informer.
I'm honoured tonight to be sharing some of the story of Chris, a person whose pathway in life has not been easy. Looking back, Chris can now say that he knew he was gay when he was around 10 years old. Some years later, he came out to a church leader who wanted him to be cured, and Chris began sessions with a counsellor aimed at changing his sexuality. And he was only 16 when his conversion therapy began. And the reason I'm telling Chris's story is because it's not unique. Gay conversion therapy is not as rare as you might think. And his story is one that highlights how destructive, how damaging this so-called therapy is, and why we need to stamp out this harmful practice once and for all. At 17, Chris's church introduced him to the leader of a program designed to turn him straight. And eventually, believing he needed to be cured of his sexuality, he was desperate enough to try it. The program was run by Living Waters Australia, one of the longest running gay conversion therapy programs in Australia. And Chris recalls that every week members spoke about their sins and they learned about the spiritual and experiential reasons that had led them to turn gay. He speaks of being so ashamed and guilt-ridden that he remained completely celibate for years. In his words, it was a pretty lonely way to live, really, but that's what I felt I had to do. He believed there were demons inside him and was desperate to be healed. Can you imagine the fear that he must have felt? He prayed to God, asking him to either heal him or kill him. Heal him or kill him. As you can imagine, the trauma associated with attempted gay conversion still affects Chris today. How could it not? And thanks to research by Dr. Timothy Jones and others at La Trobe University, we know that conversion therapy, far from going away, is actually expanding in Australia. It's just going further underground. Organisations are changing their names and their public profiles, but they're still doing the same insidious and harmful work. Dr. Jones says, there is no evidence that gay conversion therapy works. We really want religious groups to recognise that these practices, that they're doing in a well-meaning way, are actually harming their own people. It's devastating to think that around Australia, young people are trying to pray the gay away and feel immense fear and shame about who they are. Chris's story breaks my heart to think that his church, that's supposed to stand for love and acceptance, could put him through such harmful processes. It sickens me. I'm so glad that he has come through the trauma that he endured from conversion therapy, and he is now flourishing and he's comfortable with who he is. But what about the other kids who are not so lucky, who don't come out the other side? We know that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex and queer young people suffer much worse mental health than heterosexual young people. And the fact that gay conversion therapy is still happening in 2018 is absolutely unacceptable. LGBTIQ people should be receiving support, education and understanding, not being funnelled into vicious programs that use shame and fear as conversion tactics in the name of religion. We need to eradicate all reparative sexual orientation and gender identity conversion therapies. And the Greens are calling on the federal government to take action now. This is a national issue and people are being hurt. Prime Minister Turnbull and Health Minister Hunt urgently need to lead the conversation, to work with the states and territories, to engage with experts, to hear survivors and to stamp out this harmful practice once and for all. I thank Chris for sharing his story with me and allowing me to share it here in this place, and I hope that it resonates with members in this chamber so that we can work together to right this wrong. These harmful practices must be stamped out, not pushed further underground. No one else should have to feel the fear and shame that Chris felt for so many years.
What was it like when you read his experience of conversion therapy? Did you think you had a full understanding of what conversion therapy was? Because I don't think a lot of people do.
Yeah, look, it was really moving just to think of what he'd been put through and to know that he's not the only one. And the reason I, you know, felt strongly that I wanted to share his story was because knowing this isn't an isolated incident still that's happening all over Australia, that people are being made to feel just, you know, unworthy, sinful, full of demons and just full of self-loathing because of their religious faith, and they deeply want to try and reconcile who they are in their religious faith. And it's just, you know, with that level of discrimination and self-loathing by those religious organisations, it's just not possible. I also felt really strongly about it because I knew that this sort of gay conversion therapy had happened decades ago. In fact, I remember hearing stories from Bob Brown of sort of what he experienced as a young man. But to think that it was still going on in Australia in 2018 is just appalling, and that there are still, you know, young gay people who are being really traumatically disturbed by their churches.
What can we do from a political point of view? Because the reality of what conversion therapy means, it takes a lot of different levels. Some people have the visual that it's even like electroshock therapy, that it needs to be that intense. But the reality of you know, gay conversion therapy or induction therapy is that it's the minute steps that actually can have the greatest damage. How is that something on a political level that we can combat?
I think that's a really good question, and it's just, you know, what does it mean? What can you outlaw? And I know the Victorian and the Queensland governments have been grappling with this. And so in Victoria, you know, the Health Services Commission is tackling it through it being fraudulent practices. So at its core, if you've got this, you know, so-called therapy that is clearly not successful, is not based on any success rates, any logic, any science at all, but they are presenting it as being something that's going to be successful to sort of cure people of homosexuality, clearly it's fraudulent. But it is, I mean, I think it is, it's part of this, it's cultural change that we need, but the churches that are still putting young people through this need to be told that it's just not on, that it's unacceptable to be putting people through this psychological torture. And to do that, there need to be some sanctions. They need to know that if they are doing that, that there are going to be something that happens because of that. So what we're calling on at a federal level is that the federal government need to show some leadership, and at a federal level to really bring together the states, bring together people who have experienced gay conversion therapy, bring together the various state legal bodies to work through what's the best way of tackling this at a national level, and in particular, what's the best way of tackling it so it just doesn't get driven more and more underground. Because that's what I think has, you know, what's so surprising and what's really worrying that's come out in the last year is the fact that people thought it had gone away, but no, it's just been driven underground.
You're right. In the past year, we've seen a lot more people speaking up about their own experiences. We've seen journalists uncover where gay conversion therapy is still occurring. We've even had you speak about it in Parliament. That kind of visibility makes a whole lot of difference. It speaks to the importance of people being able to share their experience and share their stories. Now, you went to Parliament and used and spoke about it there and used that platform, which everyone is now paying attention to.
Actually, yeah, raising awareness. I think it is incredibly important to raise awareness that this is still going on and that it's unacceptable, and that the state and at a state and a federal level, that there is, uniform support to say this isn't acceptable. I mean, it's been interesting this week, and particularly after my speech in Parliament, and there's been a bit more of a profile. We've now had the Australian Christian Lobby come out and say that, well, they're going to campaign against making gay conversion therapy illegal. So what we need to do is for, you know, mainstream Australia to just tell them what they think of that, and that, you know, for them to be doing that is basically saying that they are going to continue accepting and endorsing a practice that is driving young people to commit suicide.
On the note of like raising awareness, what could be done to, is there a way that it could almost be criminalised? Because I know that last year in Canada, they actually passed a law that stated that choosing to use, not to use someone's chosen pronoun is now actually a hate crime, which is quite, I mean, it's very like black and white. So could anything like that be implemented here, do you think, in the future to the sort of a strict law like that?
Look, I think it could be. I mean, if you say, I mean, Australia is the only Western democracy that doesn't have a Charter of Rights or a Bill of Rights. But if we had that, I mean, that would basically say that everybody has got the right, the freedom and the right to express themselves as for the person that they are, which means that if you are a LGBTI person, that is your right as an Australian to not be discriminated against, to not be intimidated, not to be have access actions taken against you because of your sexuality. So, I mean, at the moment, our anti-discrimination laws don't go that far because of the religious exemptions that are in them. But if we had a Bill of Rights that actually said that, look, it doesn't matter whether you're religious or not, you've got the right to be accepted for who you are, you would think that it could then potentially be illegal because of that. So, but I mean, I think that's exactly what the law should look like. I think we need to do quite a bit of exploration of, which is why we say, look, this is a serious issue. It needs to have serious attention paid to it at all levels of government and all levels of the community. We need to bring people together, to come together to work out what the best way forward from here is.
We were speaking previously in regard to the ACL, and they're going to fighting conversion therapy. I think it brings us into an interesting place, and one we've experienced a lot over the past year, especially in relation to our communities, where all of these issues were always seen as very black and white.
It's a culture
us versus
wars.
Religion, yeah. One versus the other. You know, it must be this or that. But when we speak about conversion therapy, there are so many layers in regards to what it actually is, how it's actually happening, and the way in which people are dealing with the repercussions of going through it. How do you think we can combat that in a public conversation? Because you're having these conversations on air with us now. Also, you know, in Parliament, how can we combat that space of religion bad, everything else this?
I think there's a role for religious organisations that don't support the views of the ACL to speak out and to say that they accept people who are LGBTI and they accept them in their church and they accept them for who they are. And increasingly we know that's the case. And we know that the majority of people who have a religious faith in Australia, for example, supported marriage equality last year. And so I'm sure an even greater majority of people of a religious faith in Australia accept LGBTI people for who they are, they accept their sexuality, and they also would understand that it is just futile and damaging to people to try and change their sexuality. It just doesn't work. So I think we're on this journey of cultural change in our country, and we need to continue on and make it a bit faster, I think, so that the people like those who are proposing this so-called therapy, and people like the ACL are very much seen as just a tiny, tiny, hurtful, hateful minority who don't then have any broad support even within religious organisations. And so that they will realise that they are out of step even with the people that they are proposing and purporting to represent. But, you know, that's the journey that we're on of this cultural change. And, you know, we have come a long way if you think about where we've come in over the last 30 or 40 years, but we've still got a long way to go and we just need to keep on keeping on.
So with religious organisations generally, they do tend to be fairly top-down. So is it not a bit of a struggle when you have a doctrine that tends to demonize homosexuality. You have chaplaincy programs that are part of the school state system. And recently by the statements from the Pope in regards to what defines a family. How much of a struggle is there between the top-down and bottom-up approach when it comes to engaging the religious community?
Well, I think certainly because they're top-down and it's tends to be the more conservatives of older people who are in those positions of power, change can be a lot slower and a lot longer coming, but change is occurring within those religious organisations as well, even with that sort of strong hierarchy. I mean, clearly, if you had much more sort of grassroots power, and there are some religious organisations that do have more grassroots power, they are going to be naturally be able to move more quickly. But I remember talking to Anthony Venn Brown a year or so ago, who, you know, he was a Pentecostal minister, and he had his own, you know, really enormous struggle to try and
come to terms,
but to support both his faith, to, you know, to be comfortable with both his faith and his sexuality. And he was of the view that, you know, even those very anti-gay churches at the moment, you know, the Pentecostal churches, they are going to come round. Over time, they are going to change. And it's for that reason that we're talking about, because over time you'll find that even the people who are there, you know, participants of those churches, or, you know, parishioners at the Hillsong Church, that they are actually, and particularly the younger people in those communities, are going to acknowledge and accept that, you know, that homosexuality is absolutely fine. And there will be people within those churches themselves, obviously, who are LGBTI, who will be comfortable with their sexuality. And then it will be a journey for them to reconcile their faith and their sexuality. But in time, the church is going to change.
And so during this transitional time, does government have a responsibility, particularly in the cases where they are sanctioning chaplaincy programs and religious engagement with youth, to put up some parameters here?
Look, I think absolutely. And the roles that government have, they should make the most of those. So for things like programs, you know, the chaplaincy program that costs $170 million a year, or I think is what the chaplaincy program costs, it just shouldn't happen. We should be having, you know, secular counselling in our schools rather than chaplains that can be proselytising such dangerous positions. And similarly, any church school or church organisation that receives public funding should not have religious exemptions that are damaging and dangerous. I mean, I can, in our free society, I can accept that if you're a church organisation, you're off there on your own and you're not engaging with the wider community, it's going to be hard for government to say, we're going to completely control what you do in the name of your faith. But certainly where there are religious organisations and agencies that get funding, a condition of that funding is that they have to comply with the laws of the land, which means not discriminating against LGBTI people.
So I guess the question becomes now is, what can we all do? You know, you're a parliamentarian, we're parts of the LGBTI community, there's people in the medical community talking about the fact that this conversion therapy is not okay. What do you think we can do now to elevate this conversation and also help to make change on a bigger level?
Look, I think, you know, continuing to support people and to share people's stories is really important, because it's those stories of people. I mean, just like over the last, you know, 30 years, we've had just a greater profile and acceptance of LGBTI people in the community. Sharing the stories of people who have been struggling with their sexuality through their religious organisations. So anybody that, you know, for encouraging and supporting people in coming out is, and particularly in church communities, is really important. I think, you know, Chris's petition is certainly worth supporting. I mean, just having a petition that's got 41,000 signatures on it is no small thing. And I will continue to be, you know, speaking about this in the Parliament, and reaching out to your members of Parliament and talking to your members of Parliament and say, this is important. And it doesn't matter what part of the political spectrum they're on. For example, we know the Victorian Liberal Party at the moment is undergoing this great challenge, and there are some very conservative, very fundamentalist religious forces that are trying to gain more power within the Liberal Party. So actually, you know, if you are a member, if your local member of Parliament is a member of the Liberal Party, letting them know that, you know, that is just going to make the Liberal Party unelectable, basically. They are not going to be getting the support of mainstream Australia if they go down this really extreme way of supporting such harmful positions. And I really want to thank Chris for having the courage to speak out. And yes, and sort of, you know, the fact that you, you know, Joy, can be sharing those stories to a broader audience will just keep the profile up, keep the conversation going. And yes, and I think, you know, we will see change. You have to be optimistic that we'll see change. And like I said, maybe it's, you know, it's taking longer than we want it to, but I know we're on a journey of getting almost everybody in our society accepting everybody, regardless of their sexuality, their gender identity, just to accept them and love them for who they are.
That was Senator Janet Rice. If you'd like to sign Chris's petition mentioned in the interview to outlaw gay conversion therapy, simply head to change.org and search for Praying the Gay Away, or look in the description of this podcast. I'm Dean Arcuri.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.